Welcome to the Pharma Forum podcast. This is web editor Nicole Raleigh, and with me is Dr. Mark Leonderes, founder and medical director at Illum Fertility. Today, we're going to be discussing in vitro gametogenesis, or IVG, and what it means for same-sex couples and women of advanced ages who are struggling with infertility. Infertility is a heartbreaking biological condition, defined by failure to achieve pregnancy after 12 months or more of regular, unprotected sexual intercourse. Infertility affects millions of people, impacting their families and communities. The World Health Organization has estimated that approximately one in every six people of reproductive age worldwide experience infertility in their lifetime. And the WHO also states that naturally, every human being has a right to the enjoyment of the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health, both of which are adversely impacted by continued infertility. Individuals and couples have the right to decide the number, the timing, and the spacing of their children. However, a wide variety of people, including same-sex partners and older persons, may require infertility management and fertility care services. Now, Mark, I know you're board certified in obstetrics, gynecology, reproductive endocrinology, and infertility, but I was wondering if, to begin with, you could perhaps let listeners know you a little better. Share with them your path to today, the journey to doing what you do with Illum Fertility.
Absolutely. And Nicole, thank you for having me. And, you know, this field of reproductive medicine, helping people build a family, I've kind of been participating in since 1995. And it's really amazing how much it's changed. What originally kind of brought me to, you know, the field of reproductive endocrinology and infertility are some of the social, ethical issues associated with this dramatic scientific advance that's allowed, you know, 8 to 9 million people to walk the earth secondary to in vitro fertilization. So for me, you know, it's personal as well, because I'm a father through this process of in vitro fertilization, and we did go through frozen embryo transfers, and you know, I'm thankful that this technology existed for me and my husband to go ahead and become a family with children. On my own side, you know, I've been working at Illum Fertility for over 20 years at this point. Prior to that, I was working at the IVF program that takes care of the armed services for the United States of America. So I have a long history of this for myself. I am a veteran myself, so there's a lot that's rolled into me doing this. At this point, my practice is significantly LGBTQ plus, and a lot of surrogacy work, a lot of people using donated gametes to help build their family. So this technology is of interest to me and my patients, and I look forward to chatting about it some more.
Thank you, Mark. So while assisted reproduction technologies, or ART, have been available for more than 30 years, with more than 5 million children born through in vitro fertilization, or IVF, in vitro gametogenesis, or IVG, provides another method. In IVG, skin cells of one parent are taken to create an egg, which is then implanted by the other person's sperm, resulting in an embryo genetically related to both parents. And researchers at Oregon Health and Science University documented the technique in a mouse model through preliminary steps that rely upon transferring the nucleus of a skin cell into a donated egg in which the nucleus has been removed. Using mice, the investigators coaxed the skin cell's nucleus into reducing its chromosomes by half so that it could then be fertilized by a sperm cell to create a viable embryo. Instead of attempting to differentiate induced pluripotent stem cells, or iPSCs, into sperm or egg cells, the Oregon Health and Science University researchers focused on a technique based on somatic cell nuclear transfer, in which a skin cell nucleus is transplanted into a donor egg stripped of its nucleus. Now, for those listening, you'll remember in 1996, researchers famously used this technique to clone a sheep in Scotland named Dolly. So IVG, it is veritably fascinating, Mark, if somewhat futuristic. So I was just wondering, can you perhaps tell us more, including touching upon the ethical considerations?
Sure. I mean, I think that there is a future escape, but maybe not even in my lifetime, that this becomes something that's used. You know, I think we have to remember that the success rate, even at OSHU, of creating these embryos was exceedingly low. And so this process, you know, allows us to help maybe, you know, thousands upon thousands of people to conceive, but there is a lot of work to be done. And you know, we've been talking about this for years, and humans are not mice, for sure. We all know that. And everybody on this podcast already probably understands that, like, the concepts of epigenetics. And I think we always have to remember that there were some problems with Dolly the sheep after cloning as well. So this advance, I think, presents a window into a future reality, but it's certainly, you know, something that we have to step into slowly and deliberately. And following this along from a clinical perspective, there's a lot to be excited about. Thinking about using this for somebody to have a baby is a huge step. And I do think that somebody might come to the front of the line and say, I'm willing to try it. The question is going to be, are some of the bioethicists going to think that that's reasonable to do? Because it's not only about the desires of the parents, it's about the health and the well-being of the child, right? And certainly, you know, this technique needs to be replicated in different models, have higher reproducibility, and go beyond mice. So there's a lot of opportunities here to misuse this technology. It has a high degree of scientific complexity. We worry about, you know, epigenetic effects of being created out of this kind of new way of embryo creation. And there not only would be bioethical concerns, there certainly would be certain religious groups that would be very upset about this. So there's a lot of opportunities for this to help thousands of people in the future. And there's a lot of, for lack of a better word, places that this could go wrong or go off course and could be misused.
Absolutely. So if we sort of set aside the horizon of that for a moment and look at infertility treatments as they stand generally currently, perhaps you could provide listeners with a sort of overview of that landscape, including perhaps statistics on success rates, the focus being, of course, given our conversation today, on older aged women who are struggling with infertility, and also, as you said, your significant clientele at Illume, the LGBTQ plus community.
So, you know, for your listeners in the United States, you know, all ART cycles are reported to an organization called SART. So SART kind of tracks outcomes and IVF success. And just to put it in perspective, you know, the chances for success for a reproductive aged woman who walks into a clinic who's over age 41 are somewhere between 7 to 20%. So that's very low compared to somebody who's less than 35, which is about 60 to 70%. So age-related decline in fertility is real. Now, with the change in how we're able to live our lives and expand our lives and live longer, people are starting to build their families sometimes in their 40s. And there are a significant amount of women who just don't have the egg quality or reproductive fitness to make an embryo that's chromosomally normal and has other metabolic features that allow it to go on and make a healthy pregnancy and a healthy child. And those women often are looking towards using donated eggs from a 25-year-old. It can also happen that men have genetic or reproductive disorders where they don't have sperm and or functional sperm, and they're looking for donated gametes. Within the LGBTQ plus two-spirit community, you know, the majority of intended parents would love to use a mixture of their both of their family trees, but they have to move down a pathway of using donated gametes. So in the case of using donated gametes for cisgender assigned female at birth couples, you know, we're looking usually at a pathway of intrauterine insemination with donor sperm, which runs about, you know, 15 to 20% success per cycle. In the case of a cisgender assigned male at birth couple or single, they're looking at using an egg donor plus usually their own sperm as a source. And then once you get through IVF and embryo creation, chances of success after embryo transfer approach 70%. And that is the highest success rate you'll have out there because you're using young eggs, healthy sperm, and you're using somebody to carry the baby. So as we put this through kind of the calculator, you know, we've got age-related decline in fertility, healthy, younger eggs being the, you know, the requirement for success. And those are used by women who are experiencing reproductive decline or maybe women with premature ovarian insufficiency. Those are used by men who want to conceive as well. And this technology is positioned to allow cisgender assigned female at birth couples to conceive potentially using their own family trees. Same thing for the assigned male at birth couples. And the woman whose eggs have declined to a point they're not functional could potentially use her skin cells, put it into one of these donor egg cells without the nucleus, and give her and her partner opportunity to have a genetically linked child. And it is remarkable. It is provides a lot of hope. It's also far from prime time. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the caveat. And having it come to fruition is likely a reality. It's just hard to say when that will be. There's so many steps that need to come forward for anybody to feel comfortable, you know, trying to bring a new human being into the world using this mm-hmm. technology. Probably the same thing could have been said about in vitro fertilization, which kind of began its pathway back in the 50s. And it took till, you know, 1978 for the first IVF baby to be born. And that was also, you know, hundreds of tries.
So as you say, there's a far way yet to go for IVG. I mean, are you able to provide any suggested hurdles that stand in the way, be they temporal or ethical or religious, any clearer examples of what needs to happen next to advance this, as you say, this grand hope further?
Well, my understanding is that the ability to create a reproductively fit embryo is, you know, a less than 5% occurrence. So it's a highly unreliable process, right? And that is in a mouse model. And, you know, within the IVF laboratory, it's a little bit of a joke to say, but mouse embryos are really easy to grow compared to human embryos. They're very forgiving, very plastic, and you can make mouse blastocysts with not nearly as much effort as the quality control and environmental controls and media and what you need for human embryos. So, you know, hurdles being said in the mouse model, it needs to become much more reliable and have greater fidelity before it gets tried in anything else. So, you know, with these scientific advances, I'm sure there are many other researchers who maybe have already tried or are trying this new technique of somatic cell transfer. And there may be some other quote unquote secret sauce that's necessary to get a higher fidelity process and so on. And we'll have to all wait and see. The other thing that needs to be done is, what about the offspring? And we didn't see anything of the offspring from this transfer. So did these mouse pups develop normally? Did they have a normal lifespan? Did they develop any different diseases? You know, we also have to, you know, think about, you know, epigenetic effects of being an originated from a donor egg plus a skin cell nucleus, right? So there's a lot of things we don't understand. And I think as we've progressed over, you know, this last, you know, 20, 30 years of better understanding our genome, our DNA, and so on, we realize there's a lot more we still need to learn. And so I think we have to be very cautious. It's at the same time exciting, but it's at the same time, you know, needs to be done very deliberately. And I do think there's a concern that there are researchers that are very deliberate and cautious about everything they do. And there are some researchers that just want to make that breakthrough.
Yes, as you say, perhaps in this case, patience is a virtue. Let's wait and see. But there is hope, but not today. Thank you very much, Mark. It's been an absolute pleasure.
All right, Nicole, thank you very much.
And so that concludes another episode of the Pharma Forum podcast. You can find out more information about this episode, including a download link and information about previous installments of the series at pharmaforum.com/podcasts. The Pharma Forum podcast is also available on iTunes, Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, and Podbean, where you can find and subscribe by searching for Pharma Forum. Of course, don't forget to visit our website itself, where you can sign up for daily news and analysis bulletins, and follow us on Twitter, or X nowadays, at Pharma Forum. That's all for now. Thank you for listening.